Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
If you love me, please don't judge me. Got my hands tied, the power's above me. Don't shoot the messenger, I'm just a puppet here. If you wanna place blame, then look to the puppeteer. Family, fortune, envy, jealousy, privilege, passed on, legacy, secret, sabotage, borderline, felony, suicide, subtract, selfish, pedigree.
Welcome to another episode of Machiavellian Fucks, our Succession Roycast, where we're climbing into the vote boat. I'm Jason Madison, alongside Nando Vila, who's the only one who's allowed to be nasty to Frank, and Anthony and Anthony Mays, whose very absence has a certain power.
Yeah, that was a great line. I love being nasty to Frank. We all have guys like that in our lives, like you, that you make fun of, but then like as soon as someone else makes fun of him, you're like, what the fuck are you doing, man? You know, like you can't say that shit.
Yeah, only I can talk to him like that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Let's get into the meat and potatoes of the episode, man. We finally got to the mid-season climax, the shareholders meeting of Waystar Royco. That was held down by Frank.
Filibuster Frank, baby.
Yeah.
You know, that man to Congress, stat.
Yeah. Everybody was tired of him by the end of the day.
Yeah, well, I loved everything about that whole thing because it is true that they have these big shareholder meetings, you know, or whatever, you know, big corporate kind of meeting or whatever that everyone prepares for a shit ton, like, and everyone spends a lot of money on it and they're very well produced and whatever. But the whole point is to not say anything real or interesting in the thing. Like, I could script like the same script and I could just hand it to, you know, the top 100 firms in the Fortune 500, and nothing would have to change in terms of the wording. And that was like kind of the funny critique about that is just like, you know, anyone could just get up there and just be like, yeah, well, our priorities for the new year are to synergize our existing capabilities and leverage right. our initiatives around the world to establish a growth pattern that yeah. will take Waystar Royco into not just the 21st century, the 22nd century, you know, or something like that.
And it's right.
like, okay.
And like Jerry got up there for her couple of minutes and she did the same thing and was talking about, you know, buybacks and, you know, offering yeah. people different options. Maybe they divest from the cruise line, you know, yeah. and like just kind of trying to talk until she got to the video and Carolina put it perfectly. She's like, oh, she dried up.
She ended with a bright new beginning, but the journey remains the same.
Yeah. Did you guys watch that movie, MacGruber?
Mm-hmm. No, that's not my.
He keeps on saying the same line over and over again. It's like the game has changed, but the players stay the same. You know, like it's like the action movie cliches can also fit into the corporate cliches. You know,
but it makes sense because that's how Kendall got so good at just dropping useless, tasty morsels of vocabulary all the time. Is because he's well polished. He's done a fair share of shareholder meetings in his time. He's been on stage vamping for much of his life.
Vamp Carl.
Yeah, dude, the actor who plays Carl is one of my favorites. I mean, he plays such a great corporate lizard. Like, he's a different type of guy than Frank. Like, he's way more cynical than Frank, you know? Like, he does not give a shit about anything. Like, Frank does seem like he kind of genuinely cares about Logan and the company and stuff like that. Carl is just like an absolute fucking lizard, and he doesn't give a shit. They know it, he knows it, and that's fine.
Wake Carl me up when my career is over.
Carl has two moments in this episode that are so small, but like point straight to his lizardry. One of them is when his flip flop on the idea of four seats. In the beginning of the episode, he's like, he's so distraught over four seats, you know. What did he say? Full fat for them and corn dogs and toenails for us, right? And then at the end of the episode, when it's four seats, he's like, four seats, that's great. Like, he can't wait to get that deal done. And it's like, what changed? You just, nothing. And then the other part was when everybody's trying to get Logan to approve after Shiv has pretty much made the deal. And Carl gives Logan this silent nod of like, please say yes. Like, please say yes. Like, we need this. And it's just funny to watch him kind of slither around and work his little Carl magic.
Also him backstabbing Frank, going out for the handoff. And then, got this, buddy. Amazing. Take us home. Keep driving. Yeah.
Stay out there.
They need me. I got to go. I can't. Yeah. I can't be here right now.
Yeah, that was amazing.
But couldn't wait to come in and sweep up the applause. You know, Frank, you've done enough. I've got this one.
Yeah, exactly.
I can handle this.
Yeah. No, that was great. Carl had an excellent time this episode. It seemed like Jerry was up and down. You know, she was right in the thick of it with Shiv and Roman and Sandy and, you know, obviously that big conversation. And her mini betrayal of Roman. What do we think of that?
Lover's quarrel.
they've been building it up all season, right? That like, as soon as Jerry got in there, she's like, okay, dude, I'm CEO. And this weird thing that we have, like, it's not happening anymore. You know, this is just not, and he was like at first like, oh, this is just like what we do. This is part of our little give and take, you know, this is just us flirting. And I think he's starting to come to realize that she doesn't love him. Like, it's just like, it's so weird to say it, that this like older woman, you know, but yeah, that she just doesn't love him, that she was just using him. And that, you know, the fact that he caught feelings is his own damn fault.
But I mean, to me, you know, I really loved Roman this episode, and I'm honestly like asking myself as I'm watching, I'm like, am I falling in love with Roman? Like, you know, just because.
Are you a corpse, Jason? What do you mean? He might not be into you, buddy.
No, I'm just saying, like, I think that his character, like, just he seems to be maturing in some kind of weird, interesting way. Like, in the beginning of the show, you know, he was the worst. He did the thing with the kid for the $1 million. He was, you know, jerking off in the office or whatever. Like, he's, you know, well,
Roman isn't a hypocrite, you know? Like, Roman is the only one of the children who's true to himself.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a hypocrite. Like, he's a piece of shit. He knows it. He doesn't give a shit what you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, Kendall and Shiv are like the ultimate hypocrites. You know, they are just, their whole existence is a lie. Like, I remember when I was covering the 2016 election between Hillary and Trump, you know, you get in these arguments with people because, like, obviously, like, Trump would lie all the time. Like, he would do all these lies, right? And, like, all the fact checkers were, like, counting up the lies and comparing them to Hillary's lies, and Trump always had way more. But what I would always say is, like, the reason why Trump won is because even though he, like, lied more than Hillary, Trump is true to himself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's true to his heart.
He's true to his character.
Yeah. Whereas Hillary was a hypocrite, you know, like she would technically lie less. But when she said something like, you know, I'm going to put working families first or whatever, like everyone knew that that was a lie. Like you can't chalk that up as a lie. But like people read that as like her being hypocritical. Whereas Trump like doesn't come off that way for whatever reason. He's true to himself and his essence. And that's the kind of like what Roman is that him, like Logan, are not hypocrites. They're assholes. They're monsters. They're whatever you want to call it. But they're true to themselves. And that's people ultimately respect that, you know, more than someone who's just as monstrous, but is trying to sell not just to you, but to themselves that they're actually good people.
Yeah. I loved when Roman told Jerry, you know, you picked your prince, Jerry, don't fuck it up now. Yeah. And it was just like, as much as she thinks that she has a little leverage over him because she's CEO right now, he's like, we can just throw you away. Like you're not really that important to the, you know, the grand scheme of things. And so I think Roman is starting to realize like he might have access to get to where, you know, he wants to go or at least a better position. He seems like he's sitting on pole position right now over, you know, Shiv and Kendall, even though Shiv did make the deal, you know, Roman obviously talked to the president. Yeah,
Logan is not happy with that deal.
he's not.
I don't know. He's very
and,
not
and
happy.
Roman is smart enough to not place himself in a position to where he has to be the person, the point person on the deal. He knows that his dad will never appreciate whatever the deal is. And that's kind of like the fatal flaw in their system is that you can't be the point person as a child to Logan. And so Roman will never have, you know, the self-confidence and self-assuredness to be a man and try to advance himself in the ways that Kendall does, which, you know, obviously fuck Kendall up in his own ways. But like all of Logan's faults get placed on his children and they have to live with that in their existence. And it stunts all of their growth, basically.
Well, Roman is the most, like Logan from an instinctual level. Logan. Like he's, yeah, he's like a mini Logan. Yeah. The thing is, he doesn't have the specific weight of Logan because he grew up like a fucking rich asshole. So he doesn't have the muscle behind the instinct to actually like flex it. But he knows he's right that like take it to the fucking shareholders. Let the fucking janitors in Idaho decide, which is a hilarious line.
Yeah,
which
they
made the title of the episode. Rarely do you see a line promoted to title status, but that was the one.
There you go. And he knows, like instinctually, like what his dad would want. He just doesn't know, or he doesn't have the ability to like actually execute it. Yeah. Whereas the other kids, they just have a completely opposite. An acquiescing instinct or an instinct to not ruffle feathers or to, you know, for all their bluster, they're soft and they want to just like get along, play along to get along and just make a deal, like not make waves, just always back down. And that's just not what Logan is.
I love how the show, because Roman is a true baby of the family, you know, and his actions and how he interacts with the other siblings and his dad, right? When he sees his dad is kind of comatose almost, he kind of cowers away a little bit. And like, you see Connor has that older sibling kind of feeling where he's separate from the other three. And then Shiv and Kendall bicker and, you know, go back and forth like middle children. So it's interesting to see how, you know, even in this dynamic, they stay true to that American ideal of like the nuclear, like American family, you know?
Yeah. Roman is very much just my dad's right. My dad's right. Do what my dad says. I don't care if he's piss mad. he always wins before. Fuck him. Do what the man says. And eventually Shiv overpowers that. But
well, he also has like the only genuine concern for his dad. It seems well. Like yeah. like his dad's like fucking losing his mind
pickup truck
with you a can't UTI.
Jumpstart yeah. him with an adrenaline shot. Like this Pulp Fiction, Shiv. Like relax.
Yeah, he was like, hey, anyone like worried about dad, like in his health? Anyone? The kids like don't even, it doesn't even register for them, the other ones.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, do you guys think Frank is Italian?
Frank? I don't know.
The reason why I asked, because Kendall yep. says two lines that I really liked. He's
sweaty spaghetti.
He's spaghetti, yeah. And then he called him the Maitre D' at the bistro of bullshit. So I was like, is Frank Italian? Is that why he maybe. Said that?
I think the sneaky yeah, racism is more of a Logan device, but it's possible. Well, right. We'll stay tuned to that.
Yeah.
He's anti-Italian bigotry is one of the few accepted bigotries we're allowed to have in America these days.
Trust me, so, I just did sure. a movie called Homie Spumoni for Cinephobe, so I'm well aware of the
oh hell yeah the
instances of ripping on Italians being fair game.
Oh yeah. Wow. Yeah. Let's talk about the animals that
oh boy
weren't necessarily are the one animal and the invisible animal. Megathump. Let's pray for Megathump, guys.
Prayers up.
You know. Ate a bagel. Ate a bagel.
T's and P's for Megathump.
Yeah. Those rules are just fuckheads who are going to go to Tampa and leave a rabbit with a big gulp and a dozen cinnamon raisin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that ever happens. You know, like, yeah. What the fuck is that? You know, like people in Tampa don't own rabbits. Like, I'm sorry. I'm from Florida. No one in Tampa has a fucking pet rabbit.
When the moment for intimacy arrives, you need to be ready. Roman ready. You can't be fiddling around with your thing down there talking about, hold up. It just never usually happens to me. Whether you've been in a relationship for years or you're just getting started, having the confidence that comes from preparation means you're free to enjoy the moment when the moment comes, so that you can as well. Even though you are far from ordinary, the truth is ED is really common. In fact, 52% of guys aged 40 to 70 experience some form of erectile dysfunction. Go to GetRoman.com/BOM right now to speak to a U.S. licensed healthcare professional about erectile dysfunction and get $15 off your first month of treatment. As I said, this is very common. 52% of men between ages of 40 and 70 will experience it. ED treatment can help you reconnect with your partner and rediscover the joy of sex. Roman system is completely confidential and totally discreet. There are no logos or labels on the packages. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for erectile dysfunction, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan, and if medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, convenient, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Don't go to some weird waiting room looking at these other guys that have God knows what kind of issues going on with them, having people judge you. Don't do that, man. Just go online, complete your online visit today, connect with a U.S. licensed healthcare professional. Take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM today. And if you're prescribed, get $15 off your first month of ED treatment. Make sure you're ready to have confidence and control this fall. Make sure you're Roman ready. You know what? Your partner will thank you.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise, but maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm going to say, though, this is the first thing that kind of got on my nerves with the show, that it didn't really square with me from what had happened previously or what I thought. And this just might be me projecting, but it didn't seem like Kendall's daughter was somebody who would be that kind of dumb. She seemed like a quiet, smart, like kind of girl, like the way they had her in the previous season. And they kind of played her up as this like bratty, like, you know, like little kid in this episode. And I was like, that didn't seem right. It seemed like they just wanted to insert that for Kendall to be a bad dad, but it didn't really square with the daughter character. So I don't know.
I think they've done out of television making necessity what a lot of shows do, which is background the children more and more. It's nice to have the idea that Don Draper has a nuclear family and all that. And they got lucky with Sally because she grew up to be a good actress and they actually gave her some plots. But they had three Bobbies. This is what they do in television. We haven't seen the kids in two seasons. We saw them on the phone, on FaceTime, looking at this rabbit last week. And we hear her on the phone this week. They're purely using it to beat to death this idea that Kendall is one of the dumbest fucking parents out there. He bought this rabbit impulsively. He's steamrolling the fucking poor babysitter, Bianca. Just give it some fucking bagel, Bianca, but not too much bagel. Did you give it too much fucking bagel? Call the people doctor. He can do rabbit. Like, shut the fuck call up, our doctor. Dude.
It's like, wait, no. Like, he thinks like, oh, like we have the best doctor in New York City, like on fucking speed dial. you know, oh yeah, call him. And it's like, no, 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 no. That's not how that works. Like, fucking doctor's not going to know shit about a fucking rabbit, you know?
Jess's like, reaction was probably maybe my favorite moment of the whole episode.
It was incredible. I want that framed on my wall. I can't even tell you how many times I've made that face in a job situation where you're just like, are you fucking kidding me with this rabbit shit again, man?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go get another fucking rabbit next week. I don't have time for this.
Yeah. And then the dead cat, the invisible dead cat under Logan's chair.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that was like a stock market, you know, allegory to like a dead cat bounce in the stock market.
Well, there was a nice callback to season one, the first time Logan kind of lost his mind.
Oh, yeah.
And when he tried to like have Shiv give him a hand job or something, remember? You know, because he thought it was
he says I love took you. Her
for his wife.
And she's like, oh, that's so sweet. Takes his hand and then wants a little more than a handshake.
Yeah. And now in this one, when he walks out of the bathroom, he sees Shiv and he calls her Marsha, his wife. You know, nice little callback to for that. But yeah, did you guys know UTIs could do that? Because I gotta fucking be more careful.
I had no idea.
Apparently, it's true.
Reagan almost nuked Belgium.
He almost nuked Belgium, but he did get UTIs. So that part was true. I think Connor maybe embellished history a little bit because we know he loves to do
that. Well, actually, no, Reagan almost did nuke. Like almost did nuke the entire world, like in 1983. I've always wanted to do like a documentary on this or something, but in 1983, there was a NATO kind of like war game or exercise, like aerial exercise, and they kind of kept on getting closer and closer to the Russian border. And I guess one plane ended up flying off course and like going into Russian airspace. Or too close to Russian airspace, which triggered the Russian kind of automatic nuclear response. And it actually got to like a fucking high-level colonel in the Soviet Union's army, whose orders were, according to the protocol of the alarms and all that shit, to press the fucking button. And he decided not to, against orders. You know, like, and
was
so that
he just
guy,
concerned about his precious bodily fluids?
He may have been concerned about his precious bodily fluids, or he may have been convinced that they had gotten into his precious bodily fluids. But yeah, it was a close call in 1983. Unclear whether it was due to Reagan's UTI or not, but that did actually happen.
shout out to Connor for always being the history buff on the show and giving us that vital information. He had an interesting arc this
big
episode.
Win for Connor if you ask me. Honestly, Roman's a knucklehead, Shiv's a fake, Kenny's screwy, why can't I get a shot?
And it was like Logan didn't have anything for him. He hit him with three jab hook uppercut right there. Like, yeah, you're right. And so he was basically like, yeah, whatever you want, dude, like I'm busy, whatever. And then, you know, the whole scene with the president call was, I mean, hilarious. He's like, I could talk to him. And everybody's like, they didn't even pay him any attention. No. They treated him like a little kid. Like he wasn't even there.
When Carl is proposing that Roman talk over Connor, you know, you're low on the totem pole there.
he's non-existent. Like he does not even exist in their world. He's purely there for decoration and like to get their mind off of whatever's going on. If they feel the need, you know,
were you guys surprised Jerry didn't take that call?
No, I can't say that I was. I feel like Jerry doesn't want to be more responsible for anything than she has to. And she's already kind of got a lot on her plate. And so if that call would have went not a way that Logan wanted it to, you know, she doesn't want to put herself in the crosshairs. And that's kind of her whole thing, you know?
What I don't really understand is what the fuck Kendall is planning. Like, what's his like game plan? You know, like,
please, somebody tell me.
Yeah, he's very like adamant about them keeping control, but he's also like in a death, you know, fight to the death with his family. You know, at the end of the episode, he gets up on stage and starts naming all the victims.
He calls for a moment of silence, and then he talks, which is just.
For- Amazing.
The most tone.
What was that? Stuff. Was that more cringy than his L to the OG? He'd be
L to the OG slap. Yeah. So I'm with that one.
Yeah, yeah. L to the OG. She might have been his high point in the show, actually.
My boy, you know? Squiggles, cook this beat up for me.
Yeah, no, L to the OG, because people were actually like laughing at him, laughing with him, enjoying. Like, he got, that was his moment in the sun, if you ask me. This was just, yeah, this was just a clusterfuck. I don't know how else to describe it. There's no way to really spin this in a positive way for him, like, other than the fact that, you know, he got his dad to do what he wanted him to do. Which is why I think he actually blocked him. I don't think he blocked him for any other reason than that. Then he, you know, his dad was assessing the decisions of the day and realized that it went Kendall's way. But I don't understand Kendall's motivation to want to continue to pursue to put his dad in jail, honestly. Like, the whole scene with Greg, I can see him doing it to scare Greg or to basically voice his frustrations with Greg for being a turncoat. But other than that, like, Kendall should just drop it at this point. That, like, you know, you lost that whole battle. You scared him, and, you know, it was a move for, you know, to get you out of jail. But I would just say, just drop it, dude. Like, you know, you're not going to win that.
What was the great line that Stewie had to Kendall? Where he's like, well, I thought you were going to be wearing a rainbow flag yelling time's up or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
No, he said,
save
you should
it for
be
Vanity
standing,
Fair, bro. I'm good.
He said, you should be standing on a rainbow soapbox yelling time's up.
Stewie remains a high efficiency machine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stewie. Although Stewie, fucking, for all his bluster, again, like all the young people on the show, all bluster. And then as soon as you poke, he fucking folds. Like, he folded. Like, all Kendall had to say is like, hey, my dad's crazy. He's down to take it to a vote. Even though, in theory, they hold all the cards. He's like, oh, then he all of a sudden gets scared and he's like, oh, maybe we should make a deal. You know? Again, he, it's like, it's a lot like what's, you know, the situation in America right now, where, like, we're run by, like, these kind of, like, 90-year-old people whose brains are leaking out of their ears, and they hold all the power, and everyone kind of from the younger generation doesn't have the stones basically to just take it, to just take the power, right? I mean, like, I mean, it wasn't a very subtle comparison, but like, it is kind of the reality that we had Trump as president for 4 years, whose fucking brain is dead, and like has absolute holes in it. And now we have Joe Biden, who also, you know, has been known to, you know, fall asleep in meetings, take the occasional nap,
lose
his teeth, or like bleed out of his fucking eyeballs in the middle of a debate, and, you know, like is decomposing like right before our eyes, or like talk about like how some kid in a pool in Wilmington while he was lifeguard touched his hairy legs or some shit. So and like everyone, all the young people are just like waiting for them to, you know, do their big pronouncement.
They super amp that up in this episode to the point of just sheer farce with the way that we have Sandy mumbling to his daughter. No one can understand what the fuck he's talking about. Stewie is completely powerless to have any effect on this man. And you got Logan go in painkiller mode, completely losing his mind, calling people the wrong name and shit. Like, and everybody else is just milling about chaotically. Like, what do we do? What do we do? Fuck. What do we do? Oh my God. We need a deal.
Yeah.
But
the scene of Sandy in his chair, like as a full on vegetable, mumbling while his daughter kind of leaned over, reminded, and then she was like, it was exactly like the scene in Return of the Jedi, like with Jabba the Hutt, you know, like with like his little helper next to him, and he's just like, he has to translate for him. Like, it's, it's just these people are helpless without these kind of vegetables, essentially, these geriatric vegetables just hanging on every single word, trying to interpret, like, what do they say? What do they say? Like, at the end of the Soviet Union, there was this idea that, like, there was, like, what they called Kremlinologists, who were people who were just obsessively watching every single little utterance and cadence and facial expression of what they called the gerontocracy, which was these kind of, like, ancient men who ran the Soviet Union. And everything about it, like all the people around them were just like, okay, what does that mean? What does that mean? Okay, what do you think they wanted? What do you think they wanted? And like, again, the whole thing came crashing down because of that. Because at the end of the day, like someone has to fucking take control. Someone who has like an ability, the energy, and the intellect to just be like, okay, no, I'm in charge now. This is what we have to do. But in Succession, no one's in charge.
Well, it seems like the people that are actually in charge are the ones you wouldn't think would be in charge. And the only autonomous person in the show. So let me finish that thought first. The people who are in charge seemingly are Sandy's daughter and Marsha to me, right? In charge of Logan and Sandy Furness. She's supposedly leaning over to her dad, listening to what he's saying, but nobody buys that, right? It seems like she's operating, you know, fully autonomous at this point. And, who knows what his brain function even is at this moment. It seems like, you know, Logan will soon cede more power to Marsha, but the only autonomous person is Ewan. You know, he's his own man. He has his seat on the board. He's got a fortune, which he's going to give to Greenpeace, apparently. Greg's portion being the first. And he's got a similar way about him that Logan does, where he's doesn't take any shit from anybody, you know, and he's got his point of view in the world and he will not be bent or, you know, changed about that. And they're also similar in the fact that they don't like young people. You know, he does not fuck with Greg, even though it's his grandson. He does he's got that cold kind of old school, which you. Maybe it's love, maybe it's not, but he has little patience for Greg and his learning curve, you know?
To be fair, Greg's a little shit.
No, yeah, he is. I mean,
he fucking betrayed him, you know?
He is, but, you know, it's not like there are any great stewards in Greg's life anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, his mom's still buying blenders or whatever the fuck happened a couple episodes
ago. I mean, Ewan was using Greg, you know, right, as much exactly. as like, you know, like, again, like, I mean, the rule of thumb in Succession is that no one is altruistic, you know, no one is doing things out of the goodness of their own heart. And Ewan was using Greg for his own fucking purpose. He doesn't give a shit about Greg. He never gave a shit about Greg. He just saw him as a wedge, as they literally said, like, you're a wedge to stick into this company and fuck them because I hate them.
Greg the wedge.
Yeah.
Greg the Wedge.
Yeah, but Greg had some good scenes. I mean, I really did enjoy that scene with him and his dad. I mean, him and his grandpa. Just because when he told him, he said, wait, yeah, I gave your part to Greenpeace first. He said, well, how do you know?
How do you know you did that first?
Yeah, like, how do you know it was that part? That was just great. And then, obviously, the end scene. I don't know. Yeah. They're always able to come up with great scenes for him and Tom. And when Tom was like, suing Greenpeace, huh, Greg? I like your style. What's next? Yeah. Save the children.
Yeah, they really had to steal those moments in this episode. We get that ambushing of Shiv by the elevator by Tom. Where he learned that he's tracking her cycle and trying to get her pregnant before he goes to jail, which was just a whole hell of a lot there. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And then the Connor stuff, he gets his off. You know, like, they always manage to carve out a little bit of time for the role players in this show.
Yeah, they do. Who do we think won this week, fellas?
Filibuster Frank. Straight to the top. He crushed it.
Yeah.
This might be his finest moment in three seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Well, I mean, you can make an argument for like, yeah, the sort of the real people in Waystar, Royko, Frank, Carl, Jerry, you know, are breathing a huge sigh of relief. They don't give a shit like about the private jets or about the whether a Roy family member could be a CEO. Like they're fine. I mean, like, that's a perfect thing for Jerry is to keep the family members out of the CEO position. So you can make the argument that it's probably Jerry.
Right. So I didn't get the clarity that I needed on that. Did they agree to that as part of the deal?
Got taken back. So four board seats, the Jets, and
they got rid of the Jets, right?
Yeah,
they can't have Jets anymore. And then
so good compensation, they have to fly scheduled.
They have to fly scheduled like Connor did that episode with the refrigerated cheeses. Yeah. It's kind of a bummer.
Somehow I think they're going to find a way around that.
Yeah, they were already game planning like, oh, we'll just, like Carl was like, we'll just put a cap on Miles.
Cap on the mileage.
Shut the fuck up, Carl.
I love Carl. I love that.
Just tell him the fuck off later. That's all.
Yeah. Who you got winning the week, Mace?
I mean, I honestly think it's Frank, but what Nando is saying is true. Waystar won. Like anybody who's tied to Waystar won, but also Sandy and Stewie kind of won because they got the payday they needed and now they can just move on. I'm worried that I'm a loser of the week because how are they going to write Stewie into the show anymore?
Right.
If he's not involved with the shareholder meeting. But yeah, I think overall, anyone who works for Waystar got a W today.
Does that include Kendall?
Yeah, Kendall won. You were asking earlier about like what his plan is. It's still the same plan from a couple weeks ago, which is I'm going to fuck my dad, but I'm going to keep the company intact, and then I'm going to come in and clean it up, and it's all going to go great, which is just completely impossible. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Because Jerry said, like, you're going to burn, like, if you go with Kendall, you're going to burn up on reentry. Like, it's a suicide mission. You're going to destroy your own reputation in the process of sabotaging part of the company.
Yeah, I feel you.
Right.
It's hard for me to pick a winner this week because, yeah, like you said, the whole company won. Shiv obviously won. Roman, I feel like he won. Even though Logan had a bad day, I feel like he won. And even Kendall, like you said, he works for the company. They got the deal. You know, he might have embarrassed himself, but as Shiv so eloquently put it, they don't get embarrassed. So...
But the, another, you know, they've been, again, this is like the fourth time this happens this season where Shiv makes a move and she thinks she's doing right by Logan or whatever, and or like what he wants or what he said. And he's like, no, that's not what I wanted. And it's not what I said. Like when she asks, like, what would you have done? He goes, not that. Like, I don't know. I would have done something else. Like, literally not that.
I think in the long term, though, I think that was a pretty sneaky, pretty savvy move by her to sneak in that extra board seat because, as she said, you know, me or Connor or whoever, it's like there's no other option. Like, that's going to be her seat eventually, and maybe she's forming some
right,
sort
but
of...
she still didn't have the wherewithal to just be like, I negotiated, it's my fucking seat.
Does Marsha currently have a seat on the board?
Good question.
We don't know anything about it. We don't even know if they cut the deal, right? Like, have they even like, agreed to their deal?
Right. Because you know? I can just
are the lawyers still drawing it up?
Yeah, I can just see that not going Shiv's way. Like, that particular detail seems like it was.
I feel like she must because Kendall was talking about her at like the beginning of the season when he thought that she was like estranged still from Logan. I think she does have a seat, but I see what you're saying there, Nando. But I do think she's doing a little backdoor dealing with daughter Sandy here. And as Jason posited, is it possible that she's shadow running vegetable Sandy and she's the one putting all these stipulations in? And it was definitely dumb to give them another seat and to give it to this woman who she thinks she's pandering to, but probably will have something for her down the line. But I don't know. I do think she kind of bull rushed everybody into running the show with Logan incapacitated. And I do think that this board seat will end up being hers. So I think this was kind of a good episode for her.
Yeah, definitely. I went back and watched the Argestes episode, kind of where this all started, because I was wondering if there was anywhere where they hinted at Sandy possibly having some sort of illness, and they did. And so they talked about syphilis in this episode. And in that episode, they talked about him Logan brought up the fact that he might have syphilis. And Tom called it the MySpace of STDs.
The best part was Jerry being like, did we start that rumor? And it's like, Super meta, Jerry. The show actually did start that rumor. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but does he have syphilis? Did they will it into existence? Like, what's going on with Sandy? That's the real question.
We don't know. I mean, he's just a zucchini, like Stewie said. The angry zucchini. What's our favorite line, fellas?
Go with my guy, Filibuster Frank, again. A little further ado. In fact, much ado.
Much ado
about something.
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
I really liked Tom, I love Matthew McFadden's performance. Cause I just like, he goes from being like this cowering, you know, kind of shit, like just a guy whose job is to eat shit all the time, to like this kind of aggressive guy with Greg. And when he has that look in his face of like, I like your style. Like, I just like the way he delivers suing griefies,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just like, that's a move. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Just that line delivery, I thought was amazing.
Yeah, no, it was. Tom's corporate like slickster comes out every now and then. It's beautiful.
Oh, that also, when Logan calls him son and he looks at him.
Oh yeah,
and he
goes, I was like, wondering if anybody was going to bring that up.
Pop. He's like, sure thing. Pop. Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's not really a drug. It's like, Tom's from Minnesota, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because he seems like he has kind of an old fashioned waspy thing that the Roys don't have because Logan's from Scotland, but like that Tom, like, you know, he says things like the help, and he says things like pop pop or whatever calls Logan, which is like a kind of old timey American thing, and yeah, that moment was just amazing. Like this clearly, you know, losing his fucking goddamn mind, Logan is like, yeah, thank you, son.
Give me a hand. Do you want me to hold the scepter?
The scepter? Yeah. No, those are some good ones. I picked the line that made me laugh out loud, and I just think it was a genius moment of writing, when Roman says, first they came for the PJs and I said nothing. Yeah. and I fucking died, dude.
Yeah, that's a great line. That's a fucking great line. That's
a great one. I was like, yeah, no, you got it, bro. And yeah, the other one was Greg towards the end, where he was talking about suing Ewan, and he said, I love you and I'm glad you're a part of my life and I'm taking legal action against you.
Yeah,
he's trying to figure out how to sue his grandfather for his inheritance.
In a loving way.
In a loving way.
Was he calling a law student from the other episode, you guys think?
Had to be. Yeah.
That's still his only resource, I think, in the legal department.
Yeah.
But so what do we think's coming up next, guys? We got the
well, they're going to pick a new president, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The Raisin-centric episode coming up next week, folks. We're going behind the curtain to the selection
the halls
process.
Of power. Yeah. Oh, okay, the real primary. The real primary is the Waystar Royco. Yeah.
So my question is, what the fuck happened to Gil?
Well, he's on the other team.
He's the opponent.
ATN has no power over him.
But do they?
He's still leading the investigation, you know, in the Senate or whatever. But like, now that the Raisin, who's presumably a Republican, is stepping down and not running for re-election, there's an open primary amongst the Republicans, which is where Waystar will be able to like influence events. So they're just going to pick their champion in the primary.
I think Gil's coming back though. If that's
what
you're saying,
I'm asking. Is he going to come back when the election cycle meets its rotation? Are we going to get there? Or are they just going to gloss over?
Or back when the government investigation just kind of comes back, right? I mean, that's kind of been put on the back burner for a few episodes. The fact that there's still a Department of Justice investigation
Seriously.
To the company.
Yeah, I want to see more Lisa Arthur, man. I haven't seen her in a few episodes. Yeah.
They do a fantastic job of taking people and just shoving them completely off stage for a little bit. But yeah, Lisa needs to come back. Gil needs to come back. When they first teased that Connor was running for president last season, I was really wondering how deep into an election they would get. And he has talked about stepping back and working for the next 4 years, but maybe this Raisin stepping down will reinvigorate him and he'll jump right back into the fray.
He was very excited.
He was pumped.
He was very excited. Yeah.
So, no, I can see them making that more of a storyline with Connor trying to run for president and them trying to ignore it. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the whole company, you know, shuffle now that they've settled the shareholder meeting, you know, debacle. What is next on the floor for them? Who is buying for what?
Logan said acquisition, so maybe they'll be trying to buy shit again.
Right. Is PGN going to come back into frame? I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I liked Holly Hunter as a character on the show. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously the show has to take a strong turn towards the end of the season in some direction. So I guess we'll see on the next probably two episodes what that arc will be.
That's been the fifth episode of Machiavellian Fucks, our Succession recap podcast. We'll be back next week with the back half of the season beginning and things are getting interesting for Jason Madison, Anthony Mays. I am Nando Vila. We'll see you next week.